Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, you're on Online Voices with Sharon Hand, Herb Glenn, and I'm not sure who else is going to join us tonight, but I'm sure someone will. So we're just going to have current event conversations today, and if you have anything you'd like to chime in on, let us know, and we will gladly take your calls.
Yes, and welcome, everyone. It's a pleasure to be with you. Again, Trumpet, some of the things that are really going on now are some of the things that are going on this week are tremendously in favor of a conversation. Certainly, we have been able to recognize that there are going to be some conditions in relationship to the Supreme Court choice and the candidates that are running for the president, but we also have recognized that we're in the vineyard of the kind of hostility that's been going on in our community with more crime, more violence, and we want to talk about some exciting things that we have been able to approach City Hall and get some support for. But, you know, right now, it's really a good thing that we can continue to work in this capacity and develop ways in which we can build a consistent level of communication, whereas the kinds of activities that are going on in our community are really in need of some conversation. Let me get online and bring in our co-host, Ms. Ellis. Is that you?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Can you hear me?
Hey, boss. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I'm actually at the Central Ward 3.0 meeting. The mayor is actually speaking now and just talking to the people about what's been going on in the city. And he's actually going to be taking some questions from several of the residents in the Central Ward. So I'm here. Just, you know, being community involved and being community active. How are you doing?
Pretty good. A little fair. For some odd reason, I'm getting spasms in my back, and I'm not sure what it's related to, but other than that, I'm doing pretty fine.
Well, I'm kind
How are you, Minister Dallas? Sister Sharon is not here. This is Trumpet.
Oh, excuse me. That's all. I barely can hear. All I hear is the mayor talking. So, but I'm talking low. I'm talking low because I'm not trying. I'm in the back room and I'm not trying.
Mm-hmm. You know, what seems to be really going on? The mayor's been playing catch up. A number of activities that are going on. It sounds like he's really intense in his conversation. What is he trying to deliver tonight?
Well, he's just going over from what I'm gathering. You know, they've been doing a 3.0. Town hall meeting throughout the city. I attended the one in the South Ward Thursday, the other night, and I'm attending this one here. It's just, I guess, a way for him to bring people together to talk about issues at town hall, in a town hall type setting. So he, you know, pretty much he talked about the crime and the violence. And how when he took off 115, you know, they're doing everything they can now.
How's the turnout over there?
It's pretty packed.
Well, that's great to hear that people are coming out and paying attention to what he has to say, and hopefully a number of them will engage and get some things going.
Yeah.
So,
talking
about schools.
Well, you know, the big thing people are talking about, not only him, but people are talking about high schools, housing authorities, acquired properties, or sold properties, or the money portion of it goes back to no public schools. What he's talking about, why he's talking about community schools, you know, that's something that's pushed in the North Mass community schools and how they're going to have.
I know you're trying to be discreet, but you're a little bit too low for us. And I know you want to engage and get more information while you're indoors. So we're going to allow you to go ahead and break off. Thanks for calling in and keeping us informed. Maybe at the end of the meeting, we'll still be here for about another 45 minutes. Give me a call back, and we'll be able to discuss some of the relevant things that are important, okay?
All right.
All right, bro. Thanks again.
Good night, Minister.
All right. That was Thomas Ellis, who's out. I would call our community reporter now, giving us enlightenment on some of the things that are happening. Trumpet, when we are talking about conditions and what's relevant, the big story for the day.
For me, the big story is always community. It's always empowering our community. What can we do to empower our community so we can get out of this situation? Because it is not going to come through this government that we are living under.
And looking at it, you know, from the perspective of understanding that we have to do engagement of community activism, that the whole concept of being able to change the kind of failures that are going on is based upon how the government is neglecting us in many ways and getting away with it. What do you think is going to really change that?
Let me just say this, and I was so elated this week because my nephew is 9 years old, right? And he said, "Who are you voting for, Aunt Sharon?" Nine. And then a young lady on my job told me her son is 7. And he said, "I don't want Donald Trump to win." So, see, that's empowering our kids. Those kids are learning about their history, and they already see Donald Trump, and they think that he's a fool. So this is beautiful to me, and this is the start, because if we want to change this world and this system, it takes all of us. But we really got to push these kids, because these kids, with the powerful knowledge that they have, can do anything and make all the changes needed.
Yeah, and one of the things that's really clear is that we may also give them the whole story.
Yes.
You know, as an individual, Trump does have some difficulties when it comes to decorum, let's say it the way it is. Mm-hmm. Really a genius in regard to how he's taking advantage of this system,
right,
and the fallacy of it. We had argued in many instances with the community organizations, especially the cultural organizations, that it would be a tremendous problem if someone got elected sheerly because they had their own money. And we've seen it come to pass today. As far as financial reform was concerned, the many conditions that were presented to try, you know, campaign funding and everything was used as a method of saying, hey, this can be a real problem if you get someone out here who can actually do what Donald Trump is doing and perhaps maybe even get to the level where he can be the person that's running the country. Understanding that is important, and I believe that was really necessary. We have to really put a tremendous effort in teaching our kids civic engagement and understanding how the hierarchy of government actually works. And then the complexity of the American electoral system.
Well, let me first say, Donald Trump is not a genius to me. He's a pimp, and he's also a bully, what Donald Trump is. For him to be up there representing the country that he wants to run for president, and for us to even have to entertain this foolishness is disgusting to me. Because I'm sure other countries are looking at us like, what is going on? This is a joke. You know, all of our officials have been up there clowning and just doing a whole bunch of buffoonery. And for me, what's going to end up happening is that we have to withdraw from this current government system, because the laws are not just, the laws are not equal, and it's just a bunch of failed policies and procedures. And every time I turn around, I feel like I'm on a hamster wheel, because every time I turn around, we're doing the same thing over and over again. We have to be patient. We have to be calm. No, we can't keep being patient and calm, because we see where we're at with patient and calm. We can't keep allowing them to spoon feed us some money for a program or something that we don't control, because they took over the schools. And look at our school system today. Now they started up charter schools, which are corporations. Are the corporations going to guarantee these kids jobs? or is the government looking at these children to decide whether they're going to be in their business plan for mass incarceration?
Well, to be quite frank with you, unfortunately, a number of the so-called trending school programs are not effective to the extent of changing the mindset of the kids. Yes, the theory is well in place, and yes, they have prioritized funding so that there can be some success to the process. But we're beginning to recognize that a number of the kids are still doing the same risky things. You know, they're smoking marijuana in the hallways, they're beating up one another, and, you know, they're vandalizing the classrooms. And in some instances, it's gotten to a point where they're being disrespectful to the students that are not part of their program. The litmus test has got to stop. There has to be a level of concern that magnifies a careful, planned strategy on how to improve education for our children, not just throw a bunch of programs together, give it money, and say, let's just give it this kind of opportunity because we need to do something.
Well, a lot of times they don't even give us the money that we need to be able to do something. They'll throw a few coins, and then they'll want to monitor those coins and say, oh, you can't buy books, you need to buy a couch, because that's what it was allotted for. So, again, for me, we have to pull away from this government system. If you give me some, if the government gives me some money and tells me, oh, you can't buy books, you got to buy a couch, guess what? I'm buying books. I don't care what they say. Because the simple fact is, you are destroying my community with your policies. You are destroying my community with your laws. You're just destroying a race of people, you know, and you're going after them by race, religion, and finance. That's how you're determining it. And it's really hard for me to accept anything. If the children are disruptive in class, it's because they don't respect the teacher. So what teacher is teaching them? Is the teacher from their community that can understand if he didn't eat this morning? Is the teacher from their community that will stay a little later if this child is having a problem? Is the teacher in our community that will stand up and say, you're not going to bully this child in my class? No. They come from outside our community, and that's a problem.
I agree. You know, I mean, when we look at it in perspective, the real challenges that happen really come in regard to line item funding and relegating what the expenses can be and how it can be appropriated with the money that you get. As a 501c3 and a nonprofit, under federal guidelines, there are a number of restrictions that do occur. And in most cases, if you fail to follow those restrictions, you'll find yourself limited from trying to advance what your mission or your ideas truly are. So there are some realities behind what you're saying in terms of, well, you know, if I get the money, I'm going to look at what the priority is, even if it has not been approved of. It's a risky obligation to try to perform that. What I think is even more successful and how it's relevant to the idea of using funding in a way in which it can be effective is to really follow through and make those appropriations and request for appropriations in your RFP. A lot of times folk are not requesting those products and they're not seeking other resources that might be sensitive to them. You got to remember, when someone invests money, if I give you money and I'm giving you money and you tell me that you needed the money to get something to eat, and then I see you coming out of the store with a bottle of alcohol or liquor, I'm going to be upset because my investment didn't really follow what it is that I expected you to do, and you're telling me to do this. And it's the same kind of pattern. We really have to identify with the fact that in order for you to get investments or people to feel comfortable about supporting what you're doing, you have got to be doing it. And I think that's where the problem is at. It's not so much that the kids don't have books. These administrations are trying to make some risky development decisions. And in most cases, it backfires on them. in essence, there's, you know, the type of accounting, right? You have to fix the real, you know, the real money, and then you have accrual money you hope to get. And in some cases, even I have failed in this kind of mindset, is that I would go out and perform a discipline with the anticipation that the money will be coming later. What's happening is that the money is either coming later than later or not at all.
Well, again, for me, I understand the so-called policies that we must follow. But if everyone is not following the same policies, how are we calling this a law that we have to follow? In addition to that, I worked for No Child Left Behind, that program, right? I worked for 2 days, okay? And I know why I worked, because they needed to hire 14 people, because when they get a grant, they have to associate each person with a Social Security number. So they hired 14 people one night. We stayed in, we trained for like 10 hours for 2 days, so 20 hours, and then we were all let go. I asked questions about if this is No Child Left Behind, because look at what they gave me. They gave me a T-shirt that said Tutors with Computers, and they gave me a can of mace. They wanted me to go to the inner cities of Newark, which I'm not scared, the inner cities of Patterson, Camden, and all these places, and go to talk to these parents that are basically on assistance from the government. So my question was, if we're going to like five cities, how many computers do we have? Guess how many they had? It's a government program. They had 300. What am I going to do with 300 computers? What are we going to do with 300 computers? Where, you're going to put one here, one there, two there, three there, and then you're going to say, oh, we met the criteria. We did what we needed to do. I called the head office. When the woman picked up the phone, she sounded like she was in her pajamas in Texas. I'm serious. And then when I finally got through to the so-called director, he sounded like he was 80-something years old, sitting in a rocker. And there was no concern of No Child Left Behind. But money was taken. And my question is, where is the money? It's in corporations and politicians' pockets. And this is the problem. How am I going to keep following these laws or even tell my children to follow these unjust laws? For me, it might come a time where you have to take a stand. You know what I'm saying? And that stand has to be unified with all of us, that we say this is no longer going to happen.
That's important, too. I mean, to be able to organize and then deliver outcomes is really an important message that I believe we're making. And that has not happened, that there have been a number of different resolutions made, but in most cases, those resolutions was to stop the, you know, the kind of protest that may have been going on for that particular issue. And in most cases, what happens is that it falls on deaf ear, and a number of people do not participate, and therefore it has to be regenerated again. I like to make sure that we have a concept that we're working with that goes beyond the protests. And Sharon, you and I debated over this as often as anyone else needs to. But going beyond the protests, and I was very enchanted over an image that you brought up on Facebook where you're showing the Black Power fist. And it's not so much about aggression or hate or undiscipline. It's more about solidarity.
Right. Yes, it is. It's definitely about solidarity. It's about us unifying. There was a selfie challenge. Everybody posting selfies. Where's the unity challenge? Where's the challenge that we stand up and say, you know what, I'm proud. I'm proud to be Black, and I'm proud of my community, and I'm going to make it better. We have got to get there, and it's hard because we have a lot of damaged children in our area. And that comes from the systematic system that we've been following for so long. So I understand that you're not a fan of protesting, but I feel like we need people in the office. We need people protesting. We need people fighting back. You need to be covered on every aspect, because our demands can't be we want to ride on the bus anymore or the front of the bus. We want to own the bus company. We want the funding that we need that we can establish our own supermarkets. How are other people coming into this country and able to open up a Chinese supermarket and all these Chinese restaurants and then the bodegas? You know why? Because they can come into this country and receive grants that African-American people, black people, can't receive. So that is a major problem. And again, who created this problem? Who controls this situation? This so-called government of law. We already know it's a bunch of crap. You know why I say that? Because when you go to court, right, you're supposed to tell the truth. But what happens? You end up standing in front of that judge telling a lie because the consequences for you telling the truth are worse than the consequences of you accepting this prosecutor's plea. So it's all a system of money, cash, ching ching. That's all they want is money every time you turn around. And we are taking our tax dollars, and they're continuing to commit these crimes because we're not fighting back. But if we start sticking together, this country can't run without us. That's what we need to first understand. When the weather breaks, we should say, you know what? We got enough stuff to live off right now. We got to shut it down. Because when we shut it down, guess what? They don't make any money. That's why they had to deal with the Montgomery bus boycott, because they weren't making.
Okay, we're back live. We had a little technical difficulty there. We're glad to still have the kind of opportunity to be able to get back to the activities of the day. So, Sharon, I apologize. You were in the middle of a sentence. And why don't we take it from there?
Well, basically, I think I was just thinking about the system and how it's just unjust, and we have to fight against that. We can't keep saying we're going to wait and pass and, you know, get this all this documentation and evidence and do this census and present it to them so they can see the problem. They know the problem. That's what we got to start realizing. This is nothing new to them. Everything that's happening is by design. They have created a business plan, and they have put us in it as commodities. That's what they've done. And they run around here, and I'm talking about the white race. Yes, I am. They run around here, and they still feel superior, and they feel as though they can do whatever they want to do. Look at Donald Trump. He said he ain't turning over no taxes. You know what I mean? So it's like at some point in time, when do we say, you know what, this is a bunch of, we can't do this anymore. When someone gets locked up in your neighborhood, we have to start acting like Dr. King and those protesters, our ancestors. They went to that precinct and they said, we want to see him. See, you didn't get to kill him or hang him in a jail cell. Yes, you assassinated him later, but he had already planted the seed. Seeds were growing, and that's what we have to continue to do. I can't continue to work under a government. Politicians, everyone is a liar. Look at the situation with Barack Obama. They don't even want him to complete his constitutional duty. They don't care about the law anymore. Why? Because it benefits them. So when do we say, I don't care about the law because it benefits me?
Wow, that's an analogy that I never really thought to even think about. I don't know if that will be the direction we should go in, because then we'll be doing exactly, just like the Black Panthers going around putting on black hoods and saying we're going to terrorize the community because this is what they're doing.
The KKK didn't have a problem with it.
But that's what I'm saying. The KKK did that. We know that that was wrong. But it was effective for them and their white power kind of a potential. The point is that if we take a cultural ethnicity, such as the African American, and put them in robes and capes and hoods and say, well, the only reason why we're doing this is because you're doing this, I think we're going to really get any benefit from it.
No, we don't need to be in hoods. We shouldn't be in hoods because we're not cowards as they are. We are fighting for our lives to be ashamed of, and you don't need to hide from. They were not fighting for their lives. They were criminals. To this day, they're still criminals, and that's that race. So they have a – you know what kills me too? We're sending our kids to this school to learn their behavior and look at our children in community. They've learned exactly what they've been taught. They've learned how to kill each other. They've learned how to rob. They've learned how to steal, because that's what this educational system under this government, white government, has done to our children. Their curriculum is not benefiting our kids. Their tests do not benefit our kids. And we have the same right as any other state. I can't recall what state it is, but I will look it up. They have declined and withdrawn from taking any of those tests. Of course, it's a majority white state. But they have, because they said we have the power to control our lives. And we seem to fail to understand that. And it could be because of history. But that's why they have to learn history and know that your people are powerful and so are you, and you have to take a stand. It takes a lot of courage, a lot of courage. And I believe I heard that from Mr. Muhammad at your program on Saturday. It takes a lot of courage to go against the grain. And we are already out here dying. So if I'm going to die, I need to die for something.
Well, you're right. It does take courage to stand up and get involved in the things that you know are going to run into difficulties. But you prevail and you be persistent.
Yes.
And you continue to work hard, which is what we did in challenging the status quo and coming up with a concept to create our own personal academy involving the sport of tennis with it, and then showing that it can effectively help the mindsets of the kids that are working with us. Some of the things that are really important about tonight's conversation is inherent to the extent that it's not a level of animosity that has to be promulgated or heightened. What we need to begin to do is to find the information that's necessary to give us an advantage over this real problem that we have with poverty and race. And the unfortunate reality is still part of how we conduct ourselves on a day-to-day basis. When you talk about the problems that we're having with the Oscars, when you talk about corporate America, where they have individuals sitting on the board dishing out money to the urban community, and none of them know anything about the urban community, let alone care. And I think that that's where we're talking about. How well do we care about our community and what is effective for us to be able to get people involved with in a direction that is going to create a positive level of understanding for them?
Well, that's going to come from the younger generation, because they're already starting at age 7, as I stated before. They're talking about the election. They want to know who's voting for who. And they can't vote, but their parents can. So with them being empowered, they're going to say, Mom, Dad, you have to do this. This is important. But now for the other generations that have already been hurt and are angry, what do we do for them? We don't have programs for them. People like to say, oh, these kids out here doing this and that, and they're grown, they're not babies, this, but they were babies at one time. That's what we forget. This 14-year-old, this 18-year-old that's walking around with this bandana on his head, he was 4 at one time. He had no choice but to grow up. And he grew up in his circumstances and learned what he was taught, became a method of survival. He wasn't living. He was surviving. And that's why it's so hard to turn these children and young adults around, because we have no resources. Again, our resources we're looking for to come from this corrupt government. That it's never going to happen. So maybe one of our fights should be for whoever's going up to who's ever taken on the political side, that we don't want to pay taxes anymore because we need to build up our communities. Since you don't want to give reparations and you don't want to put any money in our communities, we can do it if we keep our taxes. So we have to start making demands that are going to make a change for us, and we cannot have them controlling the situation. The proof is here. Whenever they control the situation, we go deeper and deeper in a hole. So why am I going to keep going down that hole when I know ain't nobody come back? I'm going to look down that hole and turn the other way. We need a different direction.
And the relationship of that kind of performance is definitely going to have to come with people being more excited and aware of what will happen once those activities are completed. We have been very self-servient in most cases with our activities and in terms of protest, to the extent that in most cases we have no clue after the protest is over, except for the fact that we congregated, we made noise, and now they know what our problem is. I remember when we were marching up and down the streets of Newark talking about we want to stop crime, there was no real method of being able to justify the relationship that we had created, and there were no outcomes because it was basically a situation that had created a tremendous amount of attention, but there was no real plan on what we can do to really challenge this problem.
Well, where were the political people from the black community that are fighting to get into office and feel as though they're going to make these changes? Where were they? Protesting to me is very important because it agitates the community. Yes, I want them to get upset because what's happening to them, they should be upset about. And maybe they can't get the concept because it's too technical for them. So I'm here to break it down, okay? So we don't have to keep going back and forth. They don't care about you. This U.S. government does not care about you, and they never will, because the main reason they hate you, the main reason they dislike you is because of the color of your skin, and you can never change that. Now that we have created a new culture, a new race, because we have the mixed race now, we have black, Asian, we have black, Spanish, we have black, white, we have it all now. But at the end of the day, we're going to have to wait for that generation to come here, right, to get up in age, to be able to do something. That's when they'll be acknowledged. But what about right now? I can't stop crime right now without resources. I can't help the people in my community without resources. So we need to control our resources. And again, why aren't we able to get a bodega? Why aren't we able to get our own supermarket? But Koreans can come in here and take Bergen County away. You go, drive up to Bergen County, they got signs in Korean. I don't understand what they say. But see, they came in, they took their spot. Indians came here, they took their spot. You ride in Elizabeth, there's a whole section, it's nothing but Indians. There's clothing stores, there's supermarket, everything for them. You go to the Spanish neighborhood, they mix with blacks, absolutely, because they are part of the black race. However, they will congregate together before they take care of us. See, we have a major problem. Our problem stems from separation. Separation was created by who? This government.
Mm-hmm. Which really does really make sense. When we think in terms of what is happening, there should be a clarion call for people of color to come together and really look specifically at economic wealth in our community directly. And in order to do that, in most cases, we would have to identify to the fact that when they created these multi-level malls, it took away the mom-and-pop kind of an environment. Now we have very few stores that sell the products that maybe a downtown or a mall would provide, simply because of the fact that financially they cannot keep the prices low as if the major department stores do because of their financial backing and their ability to be able to get the larger portion of the constituency to participate in their business and profit margin. When we think about how things are being challenged and the method that we are approaching, where do you think we should put our priority in the involvement of educating people about economic wealth?
Well, first we have to do an economic withdrawal, and then we have to demand that we are able to keep our tax dollars. Because, again, if you don't want to invest in our community, we have to be able to do that. And we cannot do that with your just-over-broke job. See? We can't do that. Because you have us working 40 hours a week, and we're making peanuts. I got paid today. I said, let me see how much money I don't have. You know, that's the answer. So I'm working every day. I'm going in here working for this company, you know, and I'm making them money. I'm making them prosper, but I'm not prospering. And then we all sit back and say, oh, well, it's just the way it is. Get that mentality out of your head. It's not just the way it is. It's the way you allow it to be. You can change it. Because, again, I don't have a problem going into the communities and talking to the Bloods or the Crips or whoever they want to call themselves. Because at the end of the day, that's my child. And if I can come to them with a serious plan, because they know when you're not telling the truth. But if you can come to them with a serious plan and no BS behind it, they are willing to listen.
Yeah, it was really very inspiring because that's exactly what we're going to have to do. That's what we're patterning ourselves to do, you know, independently coming up with strategies that will give us a relationship of empowering individuals is very important. And in the method, what, you know, you're saying, Trumpet,
yeah.
The things that you're saying really have an effective, an effective method of being able to make, especially me, we want to respond in a positive way. But we want to talk about some positive things, though. And now we're finding out that our program has expanded to We Care Partners, Family Life, and Tennis Academy. Is in full force. We meet every Saturday from 10 to 3, and we are really going to go to a level that we know what the situation is going to be in regard to the people who participate in what we're doing. Sharon, Trumpet, you had shared with me some ideas that you really wanted to work on when it comes to theater and entertainment. Would you take a few minutes and talk about that?
I'm not sure which ideas you're talking about. I have a lot of them.
Well, we're here talking about entrepreneurship, and you have a product that you're going to incorporate in our program.
Okay. I have a product called Icy Kids, and it deals with healthy eating, an alternative treat to snacking. And it's a fresh fruit icy. And we created a character because, again, I don't have to chase behind Dora. Spanish people came over here, made Dora and Diego. They had their own characters. We have nothing. We continue to follow behind this other race. So we created a character. He's Popsicle Pup. I was going to call him Political Pup at one time, but I thought it might be too much. But with kids being 7 talking about politics, mm-hmm. I might have to change his name back to Political Pup. So he comes out from time to time. We have a dance. We have a song. And this summer, we really want to kick off and do things really big and be at a lot of different events. We did it 2 years ago. Last year, I took a break because I started working this job, just over broke, and just over broke was keeping me very tired. So this year, I'm very happy about it. And I'm also a member of Popcorn Kids, and I'm excited about just teaching them because those children come to the Irvington Library the last Saturday of every month from 1 to 4, and they love learning about their culture. They love learning about their history. It empowers them. They feel strong when they walk out of there. I'm telling you, I get this feeling that goes through my body whenever I talk about them because they make me see that there is a future. But if I keep looking at what's going on here with this government and over here with my people that are not giving any assistance, we see no future.
That's what's clearly important about why our program is definitely going to survive. Because we have the passion that goes beyond going to work and then taking the kids and trying to listen to them. What we want to do is really emphasize a true influence that they will be able to cherish and respect for as long as they will know who we are. And we're very proud of that. When it comes to what is happening here in Newark, we have been successfully able to sit down and have a conversation with Mr. Omar Elijah Baraka, who is head of the recreation department here in the city. And we offered him a package, a proposal, that we feel is going to get embraced. And we pretty soon will be rolling out a number of different influences of tennis in our community. And I hope that many of you will come out and participate when we put that program together. One of the other things that is also important is to talk about the issue dealing with employment. I had a conversation with the president of the Communications Workers of America, Local 1039, and Mr. Lionel Leach, who happens to have been an individual that I have spent some time really working hard for the people, share with us exactly what's pertinent about some of the issues that he has been defending. One of the issues that has been in the newspaper, but not a real definition of what's been happening, has been the fight against the Uber cab. And everyone knows that the Uber cab came along and kind of made life easy for all of us because we didn't have to worry about waiting on the corner to get a cab. We can make a call and the cab would be there. And it's not saying that it didn't exist before Uber. It's just saying that when Uber does it, it seems as if it's done in a more professional way. It seems also that there would be a jealousy of that from the cab drivers who are not organized in that capacity. But Mr. Leach explained to us, it's not about who's running it, it's how they're running it. There are some protections needed in that regard. Trumpet, when you have been talking to people on a day-to-day basis, does the issue of the Uber cab driver ever come up?
Well, I know a lot of people that use Uber. I even know some people that work for Uber. And I don't see anything wrong with it. You know, I think it's a good company. I can't help the other cab companies that, like Mr. What is his name?
Leach.
Mr. Leach expressed, you know, that they are not running it correctly because they're not. I mean, these cabs are dirty. They're filthy. You know, Uber, people are using their cars. So they use their cars on a regular basis. So they keep them clean. They keep them nice, you know. And, you know, you may end up knowing that person, that Uber driver. So you begin to feel very comfortable.
Well, there you go, because that's one of the things that I wanted to bring out in regard to how this program is not functioning in a way in which it can be helpful. As you know, there have been a number of incidents in relationship to Uber drivers. One of the drivers pulled over with a suspended license. Another one went out on a killing rampage spree. All of it is you know, just circumstantial. Doesn't necessarily mean that because they were Uber drivers, they were led to do those things. But what we were able to reveal and what Mr. Leach was able to reveal was that the Uber cab drivers themselves are not fully insured in the event of an incident that might involve you. And that's by the relationships that they had in creating contracts here in New Jersey. And as we began to ponder over some of the conditions that might be more appropriate that they should follow suit with when we're talking about equality, they're not playing on an equal playing ground. They are really using the New Jersey market as a way in which they can be able to gain profit, but they're not investing into all of the areas that are going to be important in the event of a problem or in the event that individuals would have to be able to do certain things according to guidelines for consumer transportation.
Neither does the government. The government doesn't do it either, okay? So Uber took the opportunity to make profit. Capitalism, right? The government loves capitalism because they let it go on all day. But if they're not involved, it becomes a problem. So, again, who is the attacker here? Who is the aggressor? It's not the people. It's the government. If they can't get a dollar or more, if you make $2, if they can't get $1.25 from you, it's a problem. And it's always been that way. So, again, I can't know. I want Uber to stay around. I want Uber to keep running because if it's some people that you can't stop crime. I mean, some people are crazy and things happen, whatever the situation is, doesn't make it right. But don't compare Uber. If you're going to compare Uber, let's compare it to the police department. Let's compare it to when a man is running down the street and they shoot him in his back and they say, oh, he's attacking me, and then he don't go to jail. Don't do it when a guy is selling Lucy's and you strangle him to death on the street in front of everybody and nothing happens. So what is the difference between Uber and the risk to my life against the police department and the risk to my life? What's the difference?
That's an interesting analysis. I don't know how you can compare the two, one against the other.
How could you not compare the two?
Well,
talk to me about
that. I mean,
that.
Again, business entity in regard to Uber's business model is broken and it needs to be fixed.
How's it broken? Because they had one incident?
No, because they have to follow certain rules.
Oh, they have to follow these illegal rules and guidelines. That's why we stay in the situation we're in. Uber said, you know what? Forget that. We're going to make our money.
Well, again, the kind of policies that we're talking about Uber has adhered to is in New York and other areas, Philadelphia. They're just not doing it here in New Jersey. In essence, I believe that eventually they will comply with that rule so they can continue to keep operating or get fined. I mean, that's just the way it's going to work. But taking a major risk by riding in an Uber car at this moment.
You tell me how I'm taking a major risk because they don't have insurance or they don't have the proper insurance?
True.
Excuse me, they have to have insurance, period, right? Think about this. Let me give you another scenario.
It depends on how insurance is
true. Let me give you another scenario. I live in your house, right? I have my own insurance. You live in the house, you have your own insurance. Another person lives in the house, they have their own insurance. They end up linking our insurance together, okay? So if I get a speeding ticket, they say you're a risk too, and your insurance goes up. Now, if I get in an accident, my insurance is going to cover, if we're all in the car, all of us. If you get in an accident and you don't have insurance, my insurance is going to cover you because that's the way they set it up now. So where's the justice in that? I'm going with Uber. Uber costs me less money. So, I got to go with Uber. You know, I'm not going to keep doing this with this government. I mean, it's ridiculous. Every time you turn around, here we go, hamster wheel. You know, every time we turn around, they make a law, and then, they'll make a law, and then they'll turn around and make the law legal. Mm-hmm. They'll make an illegal law that, that's illegal. Let's use marijuana. That's perfect. So marijuana is illegal. Kids are smoking marijuana. They're doing drugs. They have no business doing this and that. They pull that marijuana from a plant that grows out the ground. Now, you're going to turn around and say, it's legal now because I'm manufacturing it. That make a lot of sense to you? Because it makes none to me. The plant that comes from the ground came from the Creator, and it was here as medicine or whatever we needed it for. And now, all of a sudden, because you couldn't get a profit off of it, you say, you know what? They all going to jail. And once they go to jail, now I'm going to make it legal, and I'm going to manufacture it, and they can come here and buy it.
Which is what has happened now. And, you know, the whole relationship of paying attention to how government does look in the way poverty has existed to keep it that way because we don't educate ourselves. But today was a very educating conversation. Before we leave, Trumpet, can you give us a black moment?
A black moment?
Yeah, like this is Black History Month, and why don't you give us a moment about the history of some areas in blackness that you can share?
Okay. We're going to talk about, we're going to talk about a current woman. Her name is Suzanne Schenck, and she is the richest woman on Wall Street, okay? She is running these billion-dollar companies alone. This is incredible because this is a system that's doing this. And if we can get, because I'm on all areas. If we can get in there with our sister and be willing to let her mentor us, because we have a problem with that too. You know, if two people of color are working at a company, one wants to outshine the other. We can't do that. We need to work together because if I fail, you fail. We have to get that concept. We cannot continue to just say, it's me, 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 me. I'm sure she didn't do that. I'm sure Suzanne Schenck didn't do that. And I'd like for everyone to go and look her up because she is a founding partner, a president, and a CEO of Siebert Branford, Schenck & Co., LLC. Ms. Schenck is a 23-year veteran of the industry who has won numerous awards and honors throughout her career, finance industry. So this is something to, you know, just be proud of. She's the Entrepreneur of the Year by the National Association of Securities Professionals. We got to get excited about that.
And not to mention, she's a beautiful young lady.
And she's gorgeous. That's right. She's gorgeous.
Yeah, it's really interesting because she's a young lady. She's in her 20s.
No, she's not in her 20s.
Schenck is a 23-year veteran.
Veteran, yeah.
Okay, I all misread that one. Worry so much for me and cue cards. But the idea that she is still able to accomplish that task, even in this enriched environment, in this environment that we live in, where it's heavily populated with males, and not to mention Caucasian males who literally are running the show. And yes, it's such a delight. You're absolutely right. We should all get excited over Mr. Shank.
I just would wish, too, that Ms. Shank could do something for our communities. I know she is definitely involved in the inner city youth. She's definitely involved in mentoring and those things. But as we said before, she's in a position of change from the inside, from that area, because she can mentor these children so they can work on Wall Street. But at the same time, if the government, if the corporations are still being ran by the descendants of the slave owners, how far do they allow us to get? We're only going to get so far. Ms. Shank made it through. You know why? Because she's making them $700 billion. So they're like, oh, let her work. We like her. But you up and coming, you have to go through all this discrimination and race. Look at the colleges. We're sending our children to the oppressive school for them to teach our kids to be oppressed and servants. Because they're telling our kids what to think, and we're not counterattacking it. Because some of us are afraid. We're afraid to go in there and say, you know, ask your teacher, what does she mean by that? You're saying to them, no, just go in there, sit down and listen. No. Empower your children to go in there and ask questions. They have to begin to understand and accept that we will no longer be quiet and sit and allow them to do the things that they choose to do to us.
And that's really a powerful statement that you just made in regard to, you know, an individual is being influenced in an improper way, to say the least, stand up and be able to do that. But a lot of times, you know, the argument has always been said that the devil in the details is always based upon the parent. It shouldn't be a parent's responsibility to go out and educate their kids when that's what they're, you know, paying the taxes for, to have these schools open.
Look at our school system. Again, I need to keep my taxes. See, that to me, that has to be a plan for the government. The government says, no, we don't believe in reparations. You don't believe in reparations. Supposedly, you can't make money off of a crime, but you've been making money off of a crime for decades. Again, where's the justice?
Right. And, you know, there's always more than one side to look at things, and there's always definitely a way in which you can approach something and have different methods of doing that as well. It's really important for you to be able to find that comfort zone when it comes to helping to provide information about our generation and whatever it is that you can contribute to that cause, or get actively involved and participate. We're in need of as many volunteers as time can permit, and we are very fortunate to have a facility in a community that is going to be willing to allow us to do the many things that we have planned for our organization. One of the other issues that is very important is that the idea of having a union is really important, because there are individuals who are out working hard to deliver what's necessary for people in their lifestyles to receive, you know, involved with being a union leader. Lionel Leach is a person who has stood in the trenches for a long period of time. He continues to do it. We commend him, and we salute him for what he has done. Well, Sharon, how do you feel about the rest of the week, which is pretty much over now?
Yes, it's the weekend.
So you're going to be actively involved in the community. We're going to be following you. And we want to make sure that people in the community know that we're out doing these things, because we believe that our communities can be better. And we are not going to talk about it. We're not going to act about it. We're going to be about it. We're here. We're out in the community, and we're doing some great things. And we want to thank you very much for tuning in. And we'll continue to do these great things as we engage in a method of being able to communicate with all of our constituents, black, white, Asian, you name it. You can listen to what we're talking about. So we want to thank you for listening in. And Sharon, you want to say some parting words?
I thank everyone for listening in. I love my brothers and sisters. I just want us all to come together. We can make things happen. This is the time. The time is now. There's a lot going on, and we can make serious changes if we are willing to stand up and defend our rights. We can no longer be afraid. Power to the people.
Power to the people. Thank you very much for tuning in, and have a good night.
Good night.
My mouth's right.